Right, today's topic is the housing lobby. And so far, most of my talks in this course have been kind of dry and kind of technical. This one is not. This is something that I feel really strongly about. There's this 800-pound gorilla called the housing lobby. They're absolutely dangerous to housing policy, very hard to stop. They have tremendous power in the city of Washington. Let me illustrate that by showing you a paper that appeared in March of 2002. It's called Fannie Mae Papers. So these were supposed to be kind of working papers, thought pieces. And as I said, this was in March 2002, and the Senior Vice President for Regulatory Policy at Fannie Mae emphasized that they find the risk of the default of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae is effectively zero. The argument was that because of the risk-based capital requirements that imposed on Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were so prudent that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae had effectively zero chance of default. And I want to show you three kind of the characters in this drama. So first, this is one of the authors of that paper. It's Joseph Stiglitz, and I'll talk about him more in a moment. This was the chairman of Fannie Mae, James Johnson, who was extremely powerful in that period. And this is an example of someone who wasn't very powerful, but who was trying to oppose Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and to impose some tighter regulation on them, a guy named Peter Wallison, who has been the subject of lots of character assassination over the years by the housing lobby. Okay, so those are the three characters. And let me go back to the paper. So the paper does a bunch of simulations of alternative interest rate scenarios and then mortgage loss scenarios. They didn't really simulate housing prices the way I've shown you how to do to look at default. So it's a little opaque how they arrived at their simulation, at their conclusion that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae could survive stress tests for default and interest rate risk. And at the time, there was actually more focus on interest rate risk. But again, their conclusion is that there was very little chance that they could go under. Okay, so I don't want to, obviously the results prove wrong. Actually, let me go back to this paper and emphasize the background of Stiglitz. So Stiglitz, was very famous even before he won a Nobel Prize, but he did win a Nobel Prize. His Nobel Prize had nothing to do with housing markets or empirical simulations or any of the type of work you would do in this. He didn't know anything about this stuff. He's a kind of a high-thinking theorist, not an empirical economist or someone who's known for institutional analysis or anything that would relate to this. But he had a tremendous reputation. He did, and he worked. He was chairman of President Clinton's Council of Economic Advisors in Clinton's second term. A tremendous reputation, and it was his reputation that sort of made this paper important. Now, nowadays, Stiglitz will say about that paper, when he's asked about it, he says, well, back then, when we ran the simulations, there was enough capital. It was subsequent to that that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were allowed to run amok, and that's kind of what went wrong. That's actually quite disingenuous, in my opinion, because the reason that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were allowed to expand and rein in, avoid tighter regulation was exactly papers like this that said that, look, they're doing just fine. That was the way Congress interpreted it. They're just fine. You don't need to rein them in. And so the people who were trying to rein them in, people like Peter Wallison, were just shot down by papers like this. And of course, you know, again, you've got this Nobel Prize winning economist. And again, look at where this appears. This guy has a Nobel Prize. All he has to do in terms of academics, in terms of publication, is he has to publish, you know, sort of great, outstanding work. There's no way that Joseph Stiglitz was ever thinking, oh boy, I wish I could write something for Fannie Mae Papers. I mean, it's so far beneath him. I would say this, a Nobel Prize winning economist writing this kind of advocacy paper in this kind of corporate publishing environment, for a Nobel Prize winning economist to do that, that's the equivalent of an Academy Awarding actress acting in a porn film. It's just almost unbelievable that he would do it. But remember, back at the time, he probably thought he had no downside. He probably thought, you know, Fannie Mae isn't going to go bankrupt. I don't have that worry. No one's going to begrudge me writing this paper, and I'll do it. And you know, why did he do it? I'm sure he got a lot of money from, you know, this is again Jim Johnson, who could have paid him a lot of money to do it. I'm sure that's a factor, but I think it's probably more of a favor. I mean, it's speculating, but just an indication of how powerful James Johnson, the chairman of Fannie Mae in that period, was to be able to get a Joseph Stiglitz to, in effect, you know, be the Academy Award-winning actress appearing in a porn film. But that to me captures, you know, how powerful the housing lobby was. I don't want to be this, you know, any kind of attack on Stiglitz. He's actually, I think, got a lot of personal integrity. He's a real iconoclast. He doesn't, his opinions are genuine opinions. They're not bought. It's just in this, this was just an illustration of just how powerful the housing lobby could be in getting what it wanted. And it's just it's amazing and frightening thing. So who is the housing lobby? The core of it would be the National Association of Realtors, the National Association of Home Builders, and the Mortgage Bankers Association. Okay, these people have there are realtors everywhere, there are home builders everywhere, there are mortgage bankers everywhere. So every congressman has these people in their district. They are highly organized. Every congressman knows that if they do something that runs against what these people want, that congressman is going to have his opponent well-funded by these people, and that he's not going to get money from these people. And he's going to face a real problem because these people are very organized in terms of people, funding, everything. And, of course, their line is always, housing is the American dream. And more importantly, anything you do that opposes what we want is, we're going to say that you're opposed to the American dream. I mean, there's only one way to achieve the American dream, and that's by preserving the role of the realtors, preserving the role of the home builders, and preserving the role of the mortgage bankers. Okay, but that's the core of the housing lobby. That's sort of the ground troops. A lot of the money, the really big money, comes from Wall Street. Since the 1980s, and you can kind of, the great book Liar's Poker by Michael Lewis kind of describes how the 1980s, how Wall Street sort of looked at the mortgage market and said, boy, that's like the biggest financial market in the United States and we're not part of it. And they set out to get into the housing market via securitization. And so that's And the Liar's Poker, it tells a lot. It's sort of from the standpoint of a trainee at Salomon Brothers. But Lewis had a lot of insights into how Wall Street set out politically to get as big a share as possible of the mortgage market. And they did that by constantly promoting securitization. They sort of worked with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and against Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, you know, at times working with them, at times working against them. But the idea was to get away from the savings and loans, and of course eventually the savings and loans went bankrupt, and so that's what made it easy to do that, and then into securities. And the reason that they had an ambivalent feeling about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae is that they needed the government guarantee in order to have mortgage securities attractive to investors. Investors didn't want to buy unguaranteed securities, but Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae could in various ways take profits for themselves rather than and leave less on the table for Wall Street firms. So sometimes there was a little bit of a lobbying against Freddie and Fannie, but mostly working with them. You know, all sorts of small technical things that changed securities laws, or that allowed Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae not to have to go through as many regulatory hoops to issue a security. The tax treatment of mortgage securities, all these technical things that were needed, and so Wall Street lobbied, you know, behind the scenes to get them. So they're part of the lobby. Then there are these community organizations. So you think they'd be the opposite of Wall Street, and you know, so community action groups, but what Freddie and Fannie would do, and what banks would do, would be to sort of create programs, grants that would enable community or these community organizations to participate in the mortgage lending process. You know, in the name of, you know, they're gonna help you know, bring mortgages to the underserved market. So what the community organizations got was dollars, right? Because fundamentally this community organization needs money to survive, and there's a lot more money in sort of the mortgage industry than there is in sort of going out and saying, oh, we're great community groups, please give us money. So they could get money from mortgage lenders who would say, oh, you know, you help us set up special mortgage lending programs for minority groups or people in low-income neighborhoods. You know, you do that for us and we'll give you money. And of course what they're really giving, the real purpose of the banks and so on giving the money is sort of to keep to get the community organizations to be politically on the same side rather than the opposite side of the banks and of Wall Street firms and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. So it's a payoff kind of arrangement. So the result is sort of from the very top of the industry down to the very bottom of the industry, through the middle, and the people supplying the troops, you just have this gigantic lobby saying, let's make home ownership or home purchase as broadly available as possible, and, you know, constantly reducing regulatory barriers, making it easier and easier for people to buy homes with less and less money down, with less and less documentation, and you know, just the whole gamut of support for housing, with ultimately taxpayers providing the guarantee and providing the loss. So the phrase that that people have used is privatized gains, socialized losses. And that comes from the housing lobby. That's ultimately the result of the housing lobby, is that we set up a system in which all of the risks got concentrated with the taxpayers, and all the benefits and all the profits went to these various industries. And of course, in the heyday, the housing lobby included Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and in fact, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were known as the most powerful lobbyists in Washington. Fannie Mae, in particular, under James Johnson, the guy who managed to get Joseph Stiglitz to, in effect, act in his porn film, as it were. So, any discussion of housing policy and housing finance policy that doesn't recognize the existence and power of the housing lobby is kind of a waste of time. And because whatever policy you put in place, if that policy is, supposedly driven by the American dream, and as part of that has a guarantee by the government, that guarantee, my guarantee to you about a government guarantee is that it will inevitably be manipulated just over time, because these are the people who have, these are the people who have access on a day-to-day basis to regulators, to congressmen, and so on. And this lobby is every bit as powerful today, unfortunately, as it was several years ago. I mean, I'm seeing false front organizations formed. Such and such bipartisan task force has proposals for American housing finance policy, and they all involve hiding behind this American dream notion, creating a government guarantee, and then leaving as much that will ensure that the taxpayers are on the hook for the most crucial risk, and the biggest risk. Meanwhile, leaving a huge leeway for all these people to earn profits at the expense of those taxpayers. Unfortunately, that's the reality, and I hope that people who are taking this course will be on the side of trying to protect the taxpayers from this housing lobby.